Welcome to The Inner Circle, the podcast where the Radius Group, a team of experienced wealth advisors, brings you inside the circle of smart financial planning. With a network of industry experts, the Radius Group discusses the latest trends while sharing timeless wealth management techniques. So whether you're looking to optimize your portfolio, minimize taxes, or plan for your future, The Inner Circle is here to provide exclusive and valuable insights.
Welcome back to another episode of The Inner Circle. I'm Colin Faulkner, Senior Wealth Strategy Associate with the Radius Group, and I'll be your host for today's conversation on an extremely important topic, fraud, and how to protect yourself from it. Fraud isn't just something that happens to other people. These days, scams are more convincing, more sophisticated, and unfortunately, more common than ever, and they're only getting seemingly more dangerous. So protecting yourself starts with two things, awareness and education. If you could spot the warning signs early, you can often stop a scam before it starts. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Stephen Bidwa, UBS's Banking and Fraud Protection Lead. Stephen spends his days helping clients and colleagues identify scams, take action quickly, and recover from fraud attempts. Together, we're going to cover the five most common scams we're seeing right now, and just as important, the five steps you should take immediately if you think you've been targeted. So, Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Colin. Thanks for having me. Let's dive right in.
Yeah. So, Stephen, you told us before that most scams fall into just a handful of categories. So, starting with the biggest one, probably, impersonation scams. So, this is when somebody contacts you pretending to be from a trusted source, so maybe your bank's fraud department, Amazon, or even the U.S. court system. In 2024, there were over 845,000 impersonation scam reports, resulting in approximately $2.95 billion in consumer losses. Stephen, what should people be listening for in these situations, and how can they slow down long enough to ask, does this even make sense?
Sure. And that's the critical phrase right there, Colin, is slowing down. That's key. What you always want to be looking for with pretty much any of these fraud detection, these scam detection advice series is looking for these red flags that despite the type of fraud that it is, these red flags are going to appear over and over and over. One of those most important ones is the application of urgency, is the person contacting you trying to press their point that this is really urgent, that this must be done quickly. And the reason they're doing that is we as humans don't start thinking confidently and calmly when we're being pressed. And the second red flag goes hand in hand with that, which is the leverage of fear or pain on the target. So if they're telling you that a loved one has been injured and they're in trouble, they're in hospital, that someone has been arrested or you're going to be prosecuted if you don't do XYZ, those are all elements and examples of the fraudster trying to attach urgency and a level of stress to the situation that will start to short circuit your brain, and it'll turn a lawyer or a doctor into just another one of us who's having a bad day perhaps that day and isn't catching some of these signals or isn't thinking calmly and collectedly. And the beauty of these impersonation scams from a fraudster standpoint is they have so many variants of them now that there will be a variant that matches you as the target and your personal situation. So whether that's they're pretending to call from a fraud department, which really applies to all of us all the time, or they're trying to be Easy Pass and a toll, whatever your state's toll roads are calling themselves, or PayPal, Amazon, or UPS is trying to deliver a package that they're saying there might be a problem with. You've missed your jury duty, and now you're going to be fined or arrested unless you fix it. And the last one just that I'll cover is they're pretending to be a utility that's saying you're, you know, past due on your bill and they're going to shut off either your home's electricity or perhaps it's a small business that you own that you might be like, well, maybe somebody did miss that bill this month. All of those things. That's why I say it's the beauty of the design. They're so likely to apply somewhere. All of us shop on Amazon. There's always a package coming. So if you're not wary of these because you've been warned, you can absolutely fall suspect to these. Another just really quick thing to listen to is think about how patient some of these fraudsters are. They will sit on the phone and talk to the target for an hour. And then I want you to think, what does UBS expect when you call our service group, when you call in to get something fixed for you? We have an SLA of, we want to fix your problem in minutes, and we are failing as your provider if it takes us an hour to walk you through a problem. If anything, we'll say, I've explained this to you. We're happy to call you back when we're finished, but I don't need to take your time, Mr. or Mrs. Smith. We will keep this easy on you. So be suspicious if this call targeting you with this impersonation scam, perhaps, is taking a very long time. They're being very super patient. That's a red flag. And then lastly, just on these, are what they asking a strange thing? Are they asking you to convert cash to a gift card? Are they asking you to protect funds you have in a Swiss bank account by moving them out of your Swiss bank? So I just want people to think about that when we hear about these gift cards or using Zelle to protect your account, which we may get into later. You have UBS. We're a Swiss bank. We're really good at protecting assets. So people can take that to the bank when they're viewing some of these attacks when they come in.
That's great. And I guess to clarify too, the channels as which these fraudsters try to target people, is that primarily phone calls, but like text messages and emails? Those are the three primary ways. Is there any other channels that you've seen that people should be aware of that they might be approached?
No, you got the three main ones. Okay. Of course, there's any way that you can communicate with a target is, if you want to send a hot air balloon, yeah, sure. But you got the three great ones. Yep.
Yeah. Carrier pigeons aren't probably too big of a risk then. So I'm probably all right.
They're messy.
Yeah. All right. So the next one on our list is a little different. It's about dangling an opportunity that sounds almost too good to pass up. These are investments and loan scams. So the FTC reports that last year alone, Americans lost more than $4 billion to these types of schemes. Stephen, what are some of the red flags here? How can people spot an investment or loan scam before it's too late?
Sure. And the forest for the trees here is UBS has clients with financial advisor teams for a reason. They advise on investment strategies, on what makes sense for your particular situation, and not talking about a proposed investment with your financial advisory team is your first red flag. Bring it up with them. Say, I thank you for presenting this to me, Mr. Scammer, but I'm going to discuss this with my financial advisory team and get right back to you if it sounds like a good idea. Right off the bat there, that's the first great step you can take. And that leads to the second alert or the flag here would be, is the person presenting this investment opportunity to you asking you not to share knowledge of this investment with others? Oh, well, make sure you keep this close to yourself so we're not sharing all the profits with others. That's not how good investments work. If it's a good investment, it's sound, it will function if multiple people are investing in it. You're not diluting the potential profits by having multiple people buy into it. That's how they're keeping it secret so that less people know about you potentially getting tripped up and can warn you out of the scam.
Hmm. Yeah, that's good. Would you say there's any industries, specific industries or product scammers that scammers use more often as bait?
Sure. I mean, crypto is the current, du jour sparkly thing. And unfortunately, there's so many variations of crypto and the valuation of crypto varies so widely since it's been introduced. It's tempting because people want to get something for as little as possible. And they think, oh, well, I'm buying in low and I've got an inside line on this. I'm sorry, it's the old adage. If it's too good to be true, it probably is. So be very wary of crypto. It's not to say that you can't make money in that channel, but talk about it with your professional team by all means, because you can also lose a lot of money very quickly on that. So I would say with crypto, with the current market conditions we have right now, gold and any precious metal is also something that's tempting. We've had people approach to say, hey, can you convert your cash to gold? It's much safer. We'll stockpile it in a safe location for you. It is until you put your gold in a mailbox and someone drives by and steals it. There's as crazy as you want to do it, they've come up with scams and they've tricked people into actually pulling it off. So those would be the two that I would say, precious metals and crypto.
Yep. Okay. That's good to know. We appreciate that. We talk with the clients almost about every decision, whether it's buying a car or gifting to kids or buying a business. So this is something that should not feel, anybody should feel any hesitation to consult with us on too. So now onto the third one, romance scams. Now, while money is often the main target, some scams go after something that's far more personal, which is our relationships. That brings us to this third scam, which is the romance scams. Now, in 2023, losses from romance scams topped $1.3 billion in the U.S. Many of the victims were intelligent, careful people who simply just wanted connection. Now, Stephen, how do these scams usually begin? What do they kind of look like, and why is it that even cautious people can get drawn into them?
Yeah, these are really pernicious, frankly, and it's a downside to doing this job is that you see people falling for these, and that happens more often than you would believe, frankly. One of the things to warn everyone about is that these can potentially be very long life cycles before the criminal tries to monetize the relationship. We're talking 6 months, a year is not unusual at all. And the strength of that is the targets start to believe that they have this true relationship, that, oh, well, they haven't asked me of anything yet. This can't be fake. Why would they wait 6 months? The important thing to note about that, though, is these fraudsters aren't just running one romance scam. They're running 30, and all 30 of them are in different stages of building that relationship and setting the bait there so that they can start to monetize it at different amounts of time. So it's not as if the fraudster on October 1st is like, all right, everybody's got to start paying. He has been working these targets for whatever amount of time, and they're all in different phases of buying into the scam, believing the spell that's being woven there, and they don't have to sync up in that regard. So don't feel like just because you've known someone for a long time and they haven't asked you for anything yet, that it's not coming down the road. And so we'll get to some of these others. How can you detect these, right? So if you've never met this person, in real life, and you've never seen them on camera, if you're doing the virtual relationship, that's a red flag. Certainly, it's not they're fake right off the bat, but it is a concern. And you should be concerned if they're never willing to let you see them for real. If they're trying to isolate the target, you find yourself, well, you know, I've not talked to this person with any other groups. No one else has met this person from my family. If they're giving you indicators that whatever they're asking, you shouldn't share with other people, that is an indicator that there's some risk at play here. If there's shame or embarrassment that can extend the loss, don't let that make a romance scam, which is already somewhat damaging, more damaging. And that's another tricky aspect to these is once someone starts to suspect that perhaps they're being played, they may still lose more money after that fact because they don't want to come forward because they just feel shamed that they would ever fall for this or how could I have been tricked about this? Again, it happens more often than you'd like to believe. So there should not be shame. Let's just stop at the damage as quickly as we can.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one from the romance side. You don't hear that. You hear it. I just feel like it's almost more and more common, especially with online dating and stuff. So let's move on from the matters of the heart to something that can land right in your inbox or in your phone, sometimes disguised as a routine message. That's phishing scams. So phishing scams are designed to get you to click before you think, whether it's an email about a missed package, a text claiming suspicious account activity, or even a fake login page. The FBI reports billions in losses every year tied to phishing. But as you've said, Stephen, money isn't the only goal. Data is just as valuable. Can you explain a little bit how phishing works and why personal information is such a goldmine for scammers?
Absolutely. So boiled down, phishing is really just multiple different ways to trick the target out of data or trick them into opening their digital doors so that someone can come in and take data or take dollars. If you click on a link from a phishing text message, malware can be installed on your device. If you open an attachment that comes in an email that's a phishing email, they might install that malware and start tracking either what you're logging into your computer or install something that's called a RAT, a remote access technology that allows them to take over your computer. I think we're familiar more with that when an IT help desk remotes into our computers and tries to fix something that might be going wrong because they can see what we see in that regard. The other thing to remember about phishing is that it's not just a once and done experience. Fraudsters are assembling data. And what I mean by that is there's two different ways that they might be building out a data repository here. The first one is they might have bought a bit of data on the dark web or come across it from a theft or a data breach, but now they're just trying to flesh out those blank spots in that data set. So maybe they just need your date of birth, or maybe they just need to finish up some personal identifying information about you. And the second thing is, fraudsters are also creating hybrid profiles out of data that they steal from multiple real people. So perhaps they'll get your social security number, but they'll steal your neighbor's date of birth, and they'll steal a third person's legitimate address. They'll combine all of those elements together into one new hybrid person, a fake person, obviously, but then they'll open new accounts with that fake person's data. But because it's all real data, there's a likelihood that sometimes it slips through weaker fraud controls at banks. So don't think that just they got one thing, it's not a problem, because like I said, fraudsters are amalgamating all of these things. And the last thing just to reiterate here is UBS will not call you and ask for personally identifying information or credit card account numbers. We have all that already. That's not something that we should do. And there's your first red flag for phishing, because UBS isn't going to call you up and say, hey, can you give me the last 8 digits of your credit card number, which is another common trick is people think, oh, well, I'm not reading off the full account number. Right, because the fraudster has the first portion of that number from a data breach that they benefited from, and now they're just fleshing out the last little bit, and you're giving it to them because you think, oh, well, it's only part of the number.
That's interesting. I haven't thought too deeply about that. And you, even if you only give them the last few digits, they might have the rest of the digits, and that's all they need. And to clarify there, UBS won't ask you for your UBS card number, account number.
Correct. I mean, we might, we're also not going to ask you about your Citibank credit card number. I mean, there's no reason that we would be mining for that data. And certainly we have all of the UBS relevant data. Mm-hmm. And that, just another brief thing on phishing. If you think your data is not out there, there have been so many data breaches and losses and leaks of data from either government targets or Home Depot or Target or you name it. Your data, there's portions of your data out there. Your social security number, unfortunately, has probably been leaked at this point. And now we're at the stage of the game now where all of us need to have better cybersecurity practices and have more skepticism, unfortunately, in the way that we vet incoming offers and incoming communications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know there was one time I got an email from one of my partners here, and it looked like a real email. And I actually started driving to buy a gift card. And then I looked back at the email and realized that email didn't look right because it was not at UBS.com. There was a word or two off and some things had been shifted around, or there wasn't a period where there should be a period. Can you clarify a little bit too, kind of what are some of those red flags that you can identify in phishing scams, like particular as maybe emails or text, that something that just might look a little off that could be easy to determine whether it's real or not?
Those are more difficult to look for because they're designed to be hard to notice, Colin. So when you say, for example, put a lowercase L next to another L in an email address or URL, or if our address is UBS.com, but someone who doesn't know UBS yet gets an email from UBS Asset Management or UBSfinancial.com. Mm-hmm. They don't know that that's extra, but it looks official. Mm-hmm. And so that's the problem. One of the basic things is never, ever, ever click on a link that someone sends to you in a text or an email. Mm-hmm. Don't ever use a phone number that is provided to you in a communication that you don't know for sure. Always use your bank statement to use phone numbers to get them. Another great cyber practice is don't type in the user, the web addresses. Bookmark your most used addresses. So if you go to UBS.com to log into online services, bookmark that site and then only go to it by clicking that bookmark. Don't type it in, because if you do that, you're eliminating the potential of typing it in wrong or following a link that has extra characters added into it. You're only using that trusted bookmark, and there's no way for a fraudster to alter that on your computer. I shouldn't say no way, but it would be very mission impossible for them to alter it without you knowing.
Yeah, that's good to know. No, okay. Perfect. All right, so then finally, the last one, our last scam, may feel a little old school, but it's also still happening almost every day, and that's card skimming. Now, card skimming happens when fraudsters steal your card information, often at gas pumps, ATMs, or even the retail checkout machines. Now, Stephen, what are some simple ways people can protect themselves from card skimming?
Sure. And to elaborate a little bit on here, so card skimming is they steal your information by having a small discrete device that's installed where you would swipe your card or insert your card into a reader. And the skimmer will read your card as it passes through the skimmer into the original card slot. And they've gotten very good, very small now, so they're more discreet than they might have been in the past. They install them on gas pumps most frequently, like you mentioned, or on terminals at retailers or ATMs. So some of the ways that you can protect yourself from this is, one is just be observant. Know that this is now a scam, an approach for fraud, and look at those pumps and see if there's something odd, if it looks like there's a sticker attached right around where you would dip your card, or if the terminal looks a little different for whatever reason. Also know that using a card that has the tap functionality to it avoids this entire scam altogether, which is terrific. It's a much more secure method of payment. For the gas pumps, again, another good idea is, I guess this is kind of self-evident for self-preservation, but use the gas pumps that are in a more well-lit area. And why I say that is the fraudsters that are installing these skimmers are going to do it later at night when there's less foot traffic around that would notice them doing it. And the pumps that are kind of off into the shadowy areas are easier to do that on without being called out for it. And then the last thing is just monitor your card activity and your statements regularly. The fraud departments are really great working with you when you report these transactions. We know that fraud is unfortunately a cost of business these days, and it's no way to eliminate it totally. But when you're looking at your account regularly and you recognize some of these perhaps transactions that resulted from someone skimming your card, we can get them taken care of really quickly. I would love to say that it happens more often when you're traveling abroad, but there's skimmer devices in the United States all over the place as well. So being observant is your best defense.
That's good. I remember the first time I saw a picture of one of the card skimmers, and now it seems like every single time I go to check out at something, I'm extra cautious and I look to the left and the right and might look a little crazy because I'm getting underneath the gas pump to try to look up to see if there's something different about it. So, Stephen, now that we've covered the five most common scams, but knowing about them is only half the battle. So let's shift gears a little bit, talk a little bit about what to do right away if we suspect that you've been targeted. So what's the very first thing someone should do if they suspect fraud?
That's easy. Call UBS. Call your financial advisory team or call the fraud department and just talk about it. We're not going to penalize anybody for bringing a concern to us. Mm-hmm. And we always have better results the sooner you report it to us. So we always value those outreaches. Hey, I think I might have made a mistake. All right, let's talk through it. And we're happy to do that. And again, always use that trusted phone number from either your statement or an official website. Don't use phone numbers that are emailed to you. Your account has been, you know, compromised. Call this number to work with us to fix it. Don't call that number. Call the number on your statement and we'll walk through it. We'll always be able to navigate back to whatever problem's being reported. Even if you call, you know, the elephant department instead of the giraffe department, we'll get you where you need to be.
Perfect. So then after you reach out to the financial institution, then what comes next?
Sure. So we're going to identify the suspicious transactions. We also want you to start thinking back, maybe even before you contact UBS, but certainly on the phone with us, we'll work through this. And think back about the emails or the texts or the calls that you received that might be tied to what you're concerned about. Don't think that it's just a one and done thing. And that's one of the things that I actually take pride in my team doing a very good job of, which is we are thinking larger than just one transaction. We're also thinking of, do you have online compromise concerns here? Do we need to look at the device that you're logging in with? Maybe that was compromised. We'll walk through a litany of those questions and narrow down what we need to be concerned about specifically. And then the last thing to not do, don't delete any suspicious communications immediately because you're like, I made a mistake. Let me clear all this out of my computer. We will use those emails or those text messages to help our investigation. So we will ask you to be sending those over to us. And then that helps us in some of the IP address analysis that we do, for example. We can look at the domain names that are involved with some of the emails. So all of that is useful data for us. And so please don't delete that right off the bat.
Perfect. Okay. So then we make the call. We review the statements, right? Review online services activity. So then what's next?
Well, it's as simple as that. Review those statements and then let the fraud department go to work. It won't be a five-hour solution all the time. Sometimes it could be that simple, but frequently these days we have so many links and so many aspects of, we've got our cell phones, we've got our online addresses, we've got multiple different bank accounts linked together. UBS wants to do a good job with our fraud investigations, and we're not going to just, like I said before, address the one wire transaction perhaps that you're concerned about. We're going to look at, well, was that fraudster also viewing other personal information of yours? Do you also have all of a sudden three new fintech accounts linked to your UBS RMA that you should be concerned about? And we'll get those deleted out of there. So we will work through it. We'll always be there to answer any questions or to explain things 2, 3, 4 times if it's helpful. We'll work with you, and we're not going to rush you off the phone in that regard.
And is there anything else after that, Stephen, that really needs to be addressed?
Well, one of the things that I unfortunately like to bring up is heightened skepticism. We are in that day and age right now. We come up with a technology, and then fraudsters figure out a way to defeat or twist that technology. One of really good ones was caller ID. You used to say, oh, well, now I can see who's calling me before I pick it up. Well, unfortunately, now caller ID is a function that's very easily defeated. You can buy apps that allow the user to assign whatever call ID they want to their phone line and pretend to be other people. And the other thing that's, I guess it's a good thing, but we are reluctant generally to insult or be rude to perfect strangers who are calling us. And that's to the benefit of the fraudsters, because we don't always feel good about, hey, let me hang up and call you back later. Somehow there's a reason that we're being insulting, like to verify an offer, but that's exactly what we do need to start doing. So don't feel too worried that you're going to insult. And I'm not saying be rude to people on purpose, but don't put yourself in a worse position just because you think you can't break off a communication and contact them back. That's certainly not the case.
Yeah, that's good. Any other final steps that people should be taking that you want to leave them with?
Nope. All the things that we've just spoken about, the fraud process will roll on, and we will recontact you. We will work with the branch that you're used to working with as well, and we'll leave no stone unturned.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah, and this also includes, you know, even if you're not a victim of fraud at UBS specifically, still call us, and we can always help you walk through the process of what needs to be done, right?
Absolutely. We will make sure and give you peace of mind that your UBS assets are perfectly fine at that point. But also, we work with all the other financial institutions. We're a consortium team at this point. It's the only way to get ahead of fraudsters is for all of the banks and the brokerage houses to cooperate with each other. And we've all worked it where everybody was a silo. It doesn't work. It's not today's day and age. The fraudsters are working as organized crime. We need to work as organized fraud prevention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for breaking this down for us today. This is super helpful. Fraud prevention really comes down to staying informed, obviously being a little bit skeptical, maybe even more skeptical than maybe we naturally tend to do, and acting quickly when something just feels off. You know, for our listeners, I want to leave you with this. If you ever do become a victim of fraud, please don't let shame or embarrassment stop you from reporting it. These scams are designed to fool smart, careful people. Speaking up quickly not only helps protect you, it can also help protect countless others. Finally, I'd encourage you to share this episode with your loved ones and friends. The more people who understand how these scams work, the harder it becomes for fraudsters to succeed. Thank you for joining us today on The Inner Circle. Thank you very much, Stephen, for you also joining us as well. We appreciate all of your insights.
Thank you.
And until next time, stay safe and stay informed. This is Colin signing off.
Today's episode features financial advisors with UBS Financial Services Incorporated, a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 3601 Rigby Road, Miamisburg, Ohio, and can be reached at radiusgroup@ubs.com. This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary.